you're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and in this episode of the podcast, I'll be talking about technology. I've been kind of dying to talk technology for a little bit, and I thought that this would be kind of the perfect chance to do so. Let me also preface this with, this is recorded on my birthday, and released the day after. So, had a great birthday, had a great weekend for Father's Day, and spent time with my wife and kids, had to replace a back patio door. Not very fun, but it needed to be done. Wood was rotted out, the door was slamming every time it closed because it was all bent and broke, and it was the original from whoever lived at my house before me. I had to learn how to do this on my own. It was not very fun, but I feel accomplished having figured out how to do this, and to do all the work myself. So it was a difficult process to figure out how to do some of this, but I made it work. So without further ado, going into some technology, was looking into this special they had over the weekend for Sprint. Funny enough, they had unlimited plans on their service. Not that they don't now, but they had a specific plan that allowed you to get two phones, and it was $20 a phone. It was not the unlimited freedom. Each one of the services, like Sprint has unlimited freedom, Verizon has Beyond Unlimited, AT&T has Unlimited Plus Enhanced Plan, T-Mobile has One Plus. They're all more than I want to spend. Sprint, surprisingly enough, is the cheapest one now at this point. And they have, like, you can get two lines for $100 plus tax and phone costs. But they had this Kickstart plan that was new. And it was a $20 a line intro to their data, their unlimited data. And what they did is they didn't give you high def. They gave you no shared data, no high def. It was unlimited everything. However, what it was very like, 480p for the standards, and they would limit some of your internet speeds, but you still got 4G and you still connected to Wi-Fi and you could still do all that. So it was fine for me if I was able to get it. The unfortunate part is the phones that they carry, I did not want. I was wanting the Google, can't think of the name of it now. They had this, the Google XL or Pixel 2 XL. That's what it was. I wanted to get that. However, they didn't carry it. Verizon's the only publisher that carries it, or service provider that carries it. And I did not want any of the phones that Sprint had, because any of them that I would want, which would have been the Galaxy S9, was too much. So, and I'm not an Apple fan, so I don't gravitate towards the iPhones. And a lot of their other phones were basically the same setup as my Galaxy S5, which is four versions out of date. It's old, it's got its own problems. I mean, it still works, but I mean, there's a lot of issues with it. And see, like, a lot of these services, like Sprint has Hulu as an included benefit with their full unlimited plan. Verizon has Go90, HBO is on AT&T. Which, funny enough, they own it now. T-Mobile has Netflix. And see, I don't care to have any of those streaming services on my plan, because essentially you're still paying for this stuff. They just say, oh, it comes with it, to make it look interesting, but you're still paying the bill. I guarantee it. No company's going to swallow that up. So they had a pretty good deal going. I talked to somebody. They said more or less buy a phone, buy the cheap, you know, $145 phones, which were actually worse than my S5. And then sell them afterwards, which everybody knows once you buy something, it's not worth what you paid for it. So I thought it was kind of a cheap offer. Like, I was going to sign up for their plan and go with it and then buy the phone I wanted on Amazon. Because not only did it have a better battery than my S5, but the processor, the memory, the amount of storage, the camera, and a lot of other things that I'd been looking at were... going to be what I was needing out of my next phone, and the operating system would be updated more frequently because it's a Google produced phone instead of like a Samsung where they kind of decide a year down the road it's time to upgrade to one of the little segmented point numbers of the smartphone, because my S5, they've got 6.1 or something on it. And it took them until everybody was on the Android version 7 before they did that. I know they've got food names for all of them. I don't know what they are. So anyways, yeah, it was a little frustrating, to say the least, as far as they were concerned with this whole phone process. So I opted not to do it because I wanted to ensure I was getting this plan, and I didn't want to have to deal with the phone issue. I was a little bummed, but at some point there'll be a special like that again in the future, and I'll sign up then. If not, I'll just stick with my AT&T that gradually is going up little by little, and buy some unlocked phones. Because the benefit of the Google Pixel 2 XL is that I can use it on any of the services because it's CDMA and GSM compatible. So I can also put the SIM card in it. So I'm a little excited if I ever do get it. I still hate the aspect of paying almost $1,200 for two cell phones or $1,400 for two cell phones. Either way, because... to me, that's like I could replace my air conditioning with it, I will say it's been very atrocious the last 3 days as far as heat is concerned. Not even my basement, which is normally an ice cube, is a safety net for the heat. However, now it's back into the 70s, and so like we won't need the air conditioner again the rest of the summer, more than likely. If we do, it'll be in August. It's just that the weird way Michigan works. So, I have this huge problem with spending that amount of money. Like, my computer is all cobbled together old stuff. Like, I don't even... I have an i3 Pentium. Like, I don't have, like, the i7 or the i9. I don't have an up-to-date motherboard. I don't have more than 12 gigs of RAM. Because ideally, I'd love to have like 32 gigs. I'd love to have multiple hard drives. I've got a DVD burner, a CD burner, DVD burner combo, whatever. So again, it's a lot of money to throw away on a phone. And some of them are even going back to the leasing thing now, to where you don't actually buy the phone, but you pay the payment on it. And then they're like, hey, at the end of the lease, either pony up, get a new phone. On a lease, buy the phone, or give us the phone back, which I think is kind of crap. So, like I said, it's something that kind of bothers me with some of their phone plans. I wish that I could get that. I know you can get the 2 gigabyte plan, which is like $40 a month, and 2 gig of high speed data, but you have unlimited talk and text, and everything else costs you money. So. It would have been nice to get in on that other unlimited plan, but it didn't happen. So that was a little bit there. The other thing I thought was kind of interesting is Facebook Messenger is going to now include auto-playing ads with private conversations. Yay, more intrusion. Why do people trust, like, I don't... I don't put anything in Facebook or any of these other services that I don't want shared, because somebody sees everything everywhere. It doesn't matter. There is no privacy. There's no such thing anymore. It doesn't exist. And that's kind of unfortunate. I'm a little leery of technology. And this is coming from somebody who grew up with it. I grew up with a 486. I grew up with a pre-Pentium computer. You know, back in the day when you had to daisy chain hard drives together to get over a gig. And you had 16 megabytes of memory, and you had a 2x CD-ROM and 8 1/4, you know, the 5 1/4 floppy and the 3 1/4 floppy. I don't know. I'm from that old school era where I just don't trust any of this modern stuff, especially when we're getting into the AI and the recording and the fact that they input things into your messages. And so anyways, Facebook is going to start having you know, this new way to force ads on you. I am one of those people that I will not use Facebook, the app, or any of their other apps except for Messenger on my phone, because one, they run consistently and it's difficult to shut off all the stuff, including the notifications, because to me it's like a red flag automatically when the number pops up. It drives me crazy and I can't stand it. So I automatically disable everything right from the get-go. But I have my browser logged in to Facebook as a bookmark. And so I have to physically toggle Facebook on my phone to get onto Facebook. And despite the fact it can read whether, you know, the screen size, whether it's mobile or not, doesn't bother me. If there comes a point where I can't access Facebook without the app on my phone, I just won't use it. I'll delete my Facebook. There won't be a point in it. Because honestly, the only thing I use it for right now is family. I use it to keep in the know of people on Facebook, and I keep it mostly for the like Geekcast Radio fan page and the Alter Geek fan page and various other fan page things that I run for podcasts and organizations. But I don't use Facebook like everybody else. Like I don't sit there and live on it. And so to me, I have no problem cutting out Facebook. Twitter, on the other hand, that's where I have a difficult part to separate myself from. Like, I have nothing really drawing me to Instagram. I have nothing drawing, like, Google Plus is a complete bomb. I have no idea what any of the other ones are. I don't want to use them. I use Facebook, I use Google, and I use Instagram, and I use Twitter. And Twitter is my primary. And so, I already know Twitter has ads. Like, to put them in your messages, though, I think it's kind of a dicey, kind of a crappy way of doing it. But I know that they're kind of having traditional ads showing up in the private messages. And, you know, now they're saying that they're going to have autoplay videos start rolling out on Messenger starting this week, which I think is kind of crap. And so basically, the company is going to monitor user behavior to determine if these ads turn people off. And they say that, like, Stefanos Loukaios says, top priority for us is user experience. He said from a beachside cabana at the advertising festival. So we don't know yet if these will work. However, signs until now, when we tested basic ads, didn't show any change with how people use the platform or how many messages they send. Because people are addicted. People are addicted. And it's kind of disgusting. I'm having this problem myself, like separating life from digital content, and I kind of find it almost appalling that we are so attached to these devices. And it's not just, you know, people that grew up with it. It's people even now. Like, it's so intertwined in our culture, it's difficult to separate. Because we need a lot of it. Or think we need it. And, like, I joke even recently about going back to a dumb phone and just using my old phone as a tablet. And while that would serve my purpose and be fine, I use, like, the maps for when I go places, or I use, like, the email if I or work from my phone sometimes. So, like, it's convenient. Very convenient. I don't have to hulk around some big device, but at the same time, do I really need it? And so, like, that's kind of how I'm thinking now with Facebook, because they're saying that they're planning on putting these ads in, and I just see it as another intrusive way and another way just to get crap to run funky on your device. I mean, we get enough stuff spying on us with everything we download. And I have yet to see the ads actually physically pop up in Messenger, but that doesn't mean that it won't. And it could be just because mine has not updated. And so I'm a little on edge with anything Facebook does in terms of their advertising. But the other thing that's kind of getting creepy is Amazon is launching an Alexa system for hotels. And anybody that has an Alexa right now, it's going to, you know, Alexa, Google Altered Geek. Or Alexa, look for Altered Geek. So the Echo is coming to the hotel room. Amazon announced that a new program called Alexa for Hospitality is designing to bring its voice assistant technology to everything from hotel chains to restaurants and or vacation rentals. The system can be customized to include key guest information like checkout time or pool hours, allows guests to request services like housekeeping or room service, and can be configured to control smart hotel room functions like adjusting the thermostat. Okay, so some of these I kind of understand. Like, you can request a phone call, you can request entertainment, trends, you know, maintenance, room service, weather, requested items from the front desk, cleaning. Okay, I can see some of this stuff. Like, you know, raising the blinds or the thermostat, like you don't want to get up and you just want to change the thermostat when you're in bed. You know, like, for instance, it gets too cold or it gets too hot. Like, there's points in the night when you're in a hotel because there's really no good control for any of it that it kind of makes it a sense to do that or to get, like, hours for things or get information from the hotel. Because sometimes it's annoying to try and get somebody from the front desk. But you can also do, like, simple guest interactions like, you know, when's the weight room open or when's the pool open? You know, set an alarm to wake me up at such and such a time or book an appointment for this. So, I mean, I get it. It makes sense for some of that stuff. I just don't trust it because of the other fact that these devices have been known to record people and send the messages. So there's this whole privacy thing surrounding these devices. And so I don't know if I would be comfortable with one of these in my hotel room. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I find it kind of creepy, especially with the recent news that it recorded some couple's conversation and sent it to somebody else on their contact list. It just doesn't mesh with me having this technology around. Like, that's another reason why I won't have it in my house. I just don't trust it. And so, to me, that's like the ultimate reason not to have something in my vicinity. So, moving on to a little bit different territory than AI and craziness. Does anybody that listens to this podcast, does anybody use Google Podcasts? Or like Google Play Music to play podcasts? Like, what are the platforms that you guys use? Like, I have the show on multiple places, like Podbean. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeartRadio. Working on getting it on Spotify. Their process is really insane. It's on Spreaker, it's on, you know, a variety of other places. So what is your guys' platform of choice when you're listening to podcasts? Like, I don't use iTunes unless I absolutely have to. I hate iTunes. I do not like it. I find it annoying. I understand that the majority of the devices that play podcasts or the majority of the people that listen to them use Apple devices of some kind or Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever. But I don't even use Stitcher because I find that it eats a lot more bandwidth when you're using Stitcher as opposed to using something like Google or using Spreaker or using iHeartRadio. So I tend to gravitate towards those. Now, if I want to download it, I usually download them directly from the publisher on their website because I find it more controllable when I want to put it on something or download it to a device and dump it in a folder and then just play everything in that folder. And so then I just purge items as I listen to them. Because I've recently gotten back into listening to podcasts because I feel like I'm getting rusty on formats and structures of the podcast. And so like I'm trying to get more communicative when I'm recording and less like, and here's the news and don't care what anybody says. Like it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to get more in tune with that. And so, that's just something that's been kind of eating at me for a while. So anyways, Google is planning on this new podcast strategy, which they're hoping will double audiences worldwide, basically to reimagine how people find and listen to shows. Basically they want to, help in the doubling of these podcast listening over the next couple of years. And, they want podcasts to show up in Google search as a first-class citizen alongside text, image, and video results that we usually see because at the moment podcasts don't. So they also want podcast listening experiences that will be seamless across devices and contexts thanks to their Google Assistant. And then Google's speech and language understanding will open doors basically to future features. So you could have the possibility of pressing it, say, you know, Google Play or Google Podcast Play Alter Geek or something to that effect is kind of how they're doing some of it. But I guess some of the strategy behind it is that podcast is already available through Google search on Android. You know, a huge number of Android users are ready to be introduced to their first podcast, because podcasting is booming. It's been booming, but it's really starting to boom because everybody's starting to get into it. It's this new advertising venture that if you can build trust and you can build a different way of going about it, you can gather people into their shows and just kind of it brings more value when you have somebody else promoting your product. And so that's why a lot of people are starting to go to that and then have advertisements for services they enjoy or use. That's kind of why podcasting is booming. But I'm kind of hoping to see what they do with their ecosystem, with their for their podcast creators, for the content, for the audience, for the business model of it. Because currently, Google Play Podcasts sucks. Like, you can add your podcasts. It goes through an authentication thing. You can remove them, but they never actually fully remove from your account. You still have, like, ghost entries. And you can't update your RSS feed. It's mind-boggling difficult. You cannot get a hold of an email for anybody or a phone number at Google. You have to submit a form, which I saved my email that I got when I did that for one of the shows. And I was like, look, I've got 20, you know, I've got like 33 shows I have to edit. I don't want to fill out this form 33 times for multiple shows. Can I send you this document? And it's like I said, it's terrible. And then their stats, it doesn't give you any stats on the opening of it, whereas like Apple does or some of these other services. And it, the way that it pulls it in, like it pulls it in and almost imports it in a sense. Like it's not very intuitive or friendly for a podcaster to gather their information from it to get totals. It's just there's not much information there. So it's almost as pointless as using like FeedBurner in today's age. FeedBurner is another one of those sites that is just really not the way to go. Blueberry, actually, BLUBRRY, actually has a podcast mirroring feed, so you can change your RSS feed as you see fit. It's Podcast Mirror by Blueberry. And they're essentially like the new age version of Google's FeedBurner, which FeedBurner for podcasts anymore is kind of a no-no, because when your feed gets too large, it boots out anything that's new. We had this problem back in April, and shows would just stop showing up in RSS feeds. So I had to go through every show and submit updates to all of the feeds. It sucked, but it works now. They're all to the Spreaker feed, but still, it was not fun to have to do this. And so, like, if you're going to have it hosted on your site, or you're going to have it hosted, or you have the possibility of moving it, that would probably be the way to go. I had them all on FeedBurner for years because I never had to worry about changing anything. I'd submit the FeedBurner, and then it was good as gold. So that's kind of why I did that. But yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear what you guys think on like Google entering this arena on a bigger capacity than what they have been. I know Apple is changing up the arena a little bit, now requiring podcasters to use secure feeds, which they state that only about 17% are ready, which I find a little bit mind-boggling, because if you're hosting with anybody, you know, whether it's Libsyn or Podbean or Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, you know, any of the big publishers, they're all HTTPS for the most part. I don't think SoundCloud is, but SoundCloud's archaic and disaster waiting to happen. If you're using SoundCloud, get off of it. Go somewhere else. My friends over at Spreaker or Blog Talk Radio would gladly help you out. So they're saying only about 11 of the top 200 shows use HTTPS for their podcast XML, and the remaining 189 feeds use plain old HTTP. I know I used to hand code the feeds, and that was not helping things either. But they're saying that out of the 250,000 podcast series from Apple Podcasts, and analyzing them, about 204,000 are not secure, while 42,000 are. And that's kind of a disturbing ratio. Obviously, there's more podcasts in there than that, but just out of the trending podcasts, that's kind of what the standing is. And so it's kind of necessary to do this at this point, to have it, because anymore, Google, like even at the end of July, Google is going to put this kibosh on sites that are not, and I say are not, taking care of having their websites secure. Like, if your website is not secure, or HTTPS, SSL, they're going to put this basically scare tactic on the websites when they are redirected in Google, essentially saying that this is not a safe location. It's not a safe website. And I had this conversation with a friend, Hank, from TPE podcasts, and he says, you know, is it hard to switch a website, you know, podcast website like WordPress from HTTP to HTTPS, you know, any concerns or issues with it? He says pretty soon it will be a must for all podcasters, from what I hear, which it is for the feeds, you know, that is a must, and that's kind of already a thing. But there's also issues when that will arrive to the website, both on the website and various things of, you know, it breaks things. Like, certain features will break. There are plugins that will break, features, images. A lot of things will have to be troubleshot through the website after you get it to the SSL HTTPS. And we are in plan, like, our hosting has SSL, So when we move to this new website of Geekcast Radio, I'm going to have it ready for SSL, because not only am I taking information through the website, and I want it to be secure for those people, and but I want the website to be secure, and I want Google to flag it as a healthy website, as a site that is capable of just being safe. Like, Google, I know that they want to basically change the rankings. Like, after July, in Google Chrome will mark all HTTP versions of websites as insecure. So it's going to be very frustrating for a lot of people to have to scramble and change this. I didn't even know that was a thing until earlier, the beginning of the month, which means we really don't have much time. Obviously, Geekcast Radio will be ready when it's ready. I'm not going to rush it, but it may say that it's an insecure website to begin with, which I hope not, but it determines on it based on a variety of factors, but that's kind of the key thing there. So I'm not sure where the internet's going, but I do agree that security is a major issue. So moving on a little bit, Yahoo Messenger, which I didn't realize was still around, is shutting down on July 17th and redirects users to a group messaging app, Squirrel. Yes, you read that correctly, Squirrel. I have no idea what that is. They essentially announced that they're going to be winding down the service and continue to experiment and consider how and if it can have a relevant place in the messaging landscape amid Facebook and other mobile apps. There's not really a replacement product available for Yahoo Messenger. But honestly, I don't even know that many people that still use it. But there's an invite-only group messaging app called Yahoo Squirrel currently in beta. Squirrel is like a group messaging app. You know, they started testing last month. You can get beta access to it, but why? Because Yahoo really hasn't done much in the last 15, 20 years on that. You know, Oweth recently shut down AIM, AOL's equivalent messenger app in October, and I guess they're shutting down Yahoo Messenger, so I don't, MSN Messenger was gonna end up the same way if it didn't merge with Skype when it did. So obviously there's still room for it, but I think that it kind of is going the way of the dinosaur in a lot of these things, just like a lot of the old social media things like Clout and some of those others. But something I found a little interesting is California has new digital license plates that they're experimenting with, which gives you the chance to kind of do your own thing. So you can get these new digital, basically like tablet looking things, which I'm sure will have some kind of a Gorilla Glass on them. I'm sure you have to update them, but they don't have the nasty stickers. They don't have the rust on them. Like they've got the same stuff on the left, like upper side, you know, December and then California and then 2018. And then they've got the same 7 digits, which you think with a digital one, they could shrink the text and give us 8 digits. Finally, because then we could actually spell full words. Like I could put Megatron or, something. It would just be nice to have more than that. Cause you can even, customize the bottom, to have your own little slogan. So like I would basically put something that was like Altered Geek in a sense, and then make it say like, you know, Unleash the Geek in You or something to that effect. But anyways, the Department of Motor Vehicles is conducting a pilot project with a Bay Area company, Reviver Audio, which makes this plate and is about to begin marketing it for sale at auto dealerships, which I think is awesome. I would love to have one of those. It says the actual tag number will still be visible, but it will be shrunk down in the upper right-hand corner for some of it. And some of the features are experimental. It says the plates are essentially an e-ink display similar to Kindle, and when the car is in motion, they look fairly standard. It says they're going to have some feature that may be experimental, allowing you to display a message when the car is stopped. Like the actual tag number will still be visible when it's shrunk down. So like your license plate number would be shrunk down in the upper right hand corner. You can make it say something else while it's parked. They're also trying to make it so that if your car is stolen, you could connect it to your phone. So like you could do like a pseudo find my phone feature. So if your car is stolen, the plate will display the message stolen as long as it hasn't been detached. And the police will be able to track the vehicle's location, which I think is kind of an awesome way of doing it. I mean, we're already being tracked with cell phones, you know, with trackers and everything. So obviously if they put this in the back of this, it wouldn't be that big of a deal because they're going to know what you're doing anyway. All the street cameras that are out, it kind of makes sense for this. They're saying that the idea of having your car bugged and being assaulted by more advertising while you sit in traffic sounds horrifying, but there's good news. Each plate costs a whopping $699. More money than I'd rather pay for a license plate when it's like 10 bucks to buy one. And it requires a monthly $7 fee. Yeah, that would kind of put the kibosh on the idea for me. Like, I wouldn't want to spend $7 a month on a license plate. Yeah, that may give people second thoughts. And then somebody thought it would be funny on this particular website, I think it was Gizmodo, to put a blue screen error on the back of the plate as like a joke. Like, you know, second thoughts. but I thought it was kind of an interesting thought process anyway. I don't know how well it's going to be received, but I still think it's going to be funny. And then, you know, Samsung's cranking out as far as like some of their hardware, industry's first, 32 gigabyte DDR4 modules for gaming laptops, which I think is a bit overdue because gaming laptops have 16 gig. And honestly, like my regular laptop doesn't even have, it has like 6 gigs. It would be nice to see laptops actually start having more memory in them than 6 gigs, just regular laptops. But, yeah, so I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. Intel's got, you know, a launch of a 28-core 5 gigahertz CPU by the end of the year, you know, because I think they've already got 18 cores, and I guess they're working on some other stuff now where they're going to have quantum computing in the next couple years, or at least they're working towards it, with, like, a processor that looks like a giant wafer, and it has to be in a temperature-controlled box. I've been having fun watching technology over the last couple weeks. It's been fun for me. Another thing that's fun is when you have a birthday and you sign up for a bunch of newsletters and you get a bunch of free food, some of it discounted, but some of it free. And, they give you little vouchers on your birthday. So you get to eat out for like days. cause I did that all weekend. So let me know what you guys think, what you guys want to talk about in the next episode, what kind of conversations you'd like to have, what opinions. I do plan on touching base on my article I wrote the other day about the as the cracks begin to show, the internet showing its true colors, because I have another follow-up coming in the next couple days, just depending on how I get fired up about it. But I essentially talked in that episode or that post about fandoms, the toxicity, the news, humanity itself, the depression of it all, the use of social media, the constant attacking of franchises, the point of the internet has become this place that people complain, hate, attack, and attempt to destroy what others love, enjoy, and hold dear. It's not just about complaining or constructive criticism. It's just downright hateful words and pure spite. So, it's something that was weighing on my mind, and TFG and Mike was nice enough to share it around the internet. But, I do have follow-up concepts and articles I plan on writing soon, just because I've gotten this itch to write again, which is strange for me. So anyways, like I said, let me know what you guys think, what you want to talk about in the next episode, what conversation. Let me know with hashtag what's geeky to you. Tag the podcast at Altered Geek. And you can get a hold of me on Twitter at SCP21. So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.